Hello! This is Pursuing True North. I'm Jenny Scioto. Today, Catherine King and I interview Andrea McGinnis. She is the executive director of the Hands and Feet Project. Andrea has been intricately involved with the Hands and Feet Project since its beginning. She's done various roles and has a real heart for this. Join us today as we hear her testimony and her journey with this fabulous organization.
Andrea, thank you so much for being with us today and spending time kind of telling us a bit about you and the journey you've been on in your life and what God's done in and through you. And I just want to kind of start off by asking you a bit about your story, about you and God. Like, what experiences have you had that have deepened and enriched your faith?
Well, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be a part of this podcast, and to meet you both has been lovely this morning, so thank you so much. I think the conversation about my journey, I think, has been a long one because I'm, you know, approaching 50, so I think typically I talk about, you know, different times in my life where things are just different. And so different phases kind of ring out to me to say, what did I learn? Like in retrospect, and you evaluating kind of where you're landing today, it's like, what did I learn in different seasons in my life?
Yeah.
And so I just, you know, I think that's probably part of everybody's walk is, you know, things kind of ebb and flow and you have different rhythms based on seasons or time periods in your life. And so, I think every season has something to learn. So when and how to lean on God in those times, depending on what's going on.
So where did you first start with just recognizing that Jesus was who he said he was, and that moment where your heart and his connected, and you had that moment, that first moment?
Well, it goes way back. So that goes back into the early 90s. So I wasn't raised in the church. So I was raised knowing of God and of maybe religion, specifically Catholicism. And so it really didn't make any, you know, and I'm sure most of it's probably for me to blame. I didn't pursue it. Maybe at that time I didn't recognize when God was pursuing me, but I think for the first 20 years of my life, I was unchurched and not a believer. I would have probably called myself a Christian just because that's what my family did. And yeah, wow. Or actually my answer probably would have been I'm Catholic. So to me, okay, that was all the same thing. It was the only thing I knew. And so I think that just is what I used as a label to say, yeah, I'm Catholic. And I don't think there was any connection to like faith or belief, or I'd never touched a Bible. And so I think for me, I think that was just routine response. So I think fast forward through all my, you know, childhood, adolescence, early adult life, just came across somebody who just talked to me about it. I mean, that was just pretty simple. You know, I was in an environment where I was in my early 20s and I was kind of struggling with purpose, maybe. You know, I was, I grew up in Ohio, so just a lot of like nitty gritty ways of maybe probably taught more just kind of making sure that you have a plan and making sure you're going to be able to provide for your family. You know, I grew up in a blue collar family, so it was really, that was more of the concern, like what is your plan for your life and how are you going to provide for your family? And I just really just felt the tug that there's got to be something like bigger,
something more,
yeah, I don't know about better, because I don't want to say that isn't all valid, but I just felt like there was more. So I think in that timing of my kind of longing and then just meeting, you know, a random person at a place that came and talked to me about it.
So where
it just was, you know, I just wouldn't even say probably before that period, I would have been like, what are you talking about? You know, I just wouldn't have been necessarily receptive. So I guess for me, it was just kind of where I was in my journey, God's kind of pull, and that using somebody else as the tool. So
you had this this encounter,
yeah,
with someone who was just, was it in the same day as they met you, or was this a relationship?
Yes,
that
no,
was built
stranger Yeah, just a stranger, and it just really triggered a lot of deep thoughts, and there was follow through from that person. And then I was talking to people at my school. I was in university, and I just was like, man, this person is talking to me about something I don't really understand. And they just thought I was crazy. They're like, well, yeah, like I'm a believer. I'm a Christian. I go to church. And I'm like, why didn't you ever talk to me? You know? And I think just God just kept putting other people in my path. And so just was like, really, really? I'm like, it really just felt like walking out of a fog. That was maybe out of a mist where you're just like, oh, like things are starting to take shape and your vision is better and more clear.
Does that so make as sense? You're seeking.
Yeah. As you're I don't seeking, know if I necessarily, then, I was just seeking something.
Yes, you were just yeah. in the seeking, you were in that
longing for something.
You were in that moment yeah. of, okay, I'm like you said, receptive.
Mm-hmm.
So you received this great news that Jesus was a relationship and
that there was more.
That there's more.
Yeah.
And where do you finish school? Do you change your mind on what you're doing with your life? Like, what's happening here?
I'm still a Midwesterner. Yes, I finished school. So no, yeah, I continue to, I mean, yeah, I think, you know, I stayed on that school path. I started to attend, so I went to the University of Cincinnati. So there was a little chapel that was just right across the street. And so I started attending chapel and just starting meeting new people and just kind of really soaking up, man, just every word. And just went every Sunday. And it was just a really like a time of just immense learning, because you just think like, I don't know like anything, like I've never opened the Bible and I've never kind of understood the word. And so I think for that period of time it was just I'm not going to say that I became a scholar, so I don't want to
oh no
like, you know, I'm just like, you know, it's like gorging yourself and then maybe not just getting all the nutrition out of it. Does that make sense? Like kind of like soaking in the word. And so then just started just having other people in my life that were just nurturing and just had a different worldview and just kind of reformulating the way I lived life.
Where did the Holy Spirit kind of lead you as you are finishing up college and you've gone through this stage of your seeking and your excitement and your new walk with the Holy Spirit? What do you do after school?
Well, after school I had a plan, but I think during that process, you know, I don't know if I, as a new believer, I don't think I had gotten to purpose. Do you know what I mean? I was working on such foundational pieces that I don't think I was like,
purpose
just
sometimes
totally
comes a bit later, doesn't it?
I think so, yeah. But I think it was just, I think I was just too much, I just wasn't ready for maybe, hey, not only did you just become, you know, a new believer, but also, hey, this is my purpose I've given you. It just didn't come like that
quick. Some people
so,
it doesn't. It didn't. Yeah. It hasn't for me. So yeah. I do understand that completely. So
yeah. So yeah. You know, fast forward, I graduated from school, and say dates a long time ago, and moved to Nashville. So I
what brought you to Nashville?
I know this will be a surprise, but the music industry brought me to Nashville. But that is not anything that has to do with me. So I fell in love and followed a musician to Nashville.
Okay.
We were engaged, so I followed my fiance to Nashville, who's now
well, he
my
put
husband.
A ring. He put a ring on the finger,
he
so
did.
You're like, I'll go.
He did. I wouldn't have followed without it, I'm pretty sure. I think actually he asked me if I would go to Nashville, and I was like, are you at, like, why? Like, are we gonna get married? And so I think our very fancy proposal ended up being like, hey, if you want me to come to Nashville, then I'm not going unless we're gonna get married. But I would also say Nashville, I had never really heard of it, and I think my idea of it was horses and cowboy hats and country music.
You came before it was cool. We came
I did, yes. Yes, definitely. And everybody's like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I was headed towards Chicago. So, but no, I've landed here in Nashville. And my husband was in the music industry. And so I think for that season, you know, I think when leading into marriage and family and him traveling extensively on the road. So back in the days, they didn't have cell phones and FaceTime and all of those wonderful tools that people have now. So there was just long periods of time just where he was on the road. And so just, I think my purpose was in a support role for what he was doing and accomplishing in his life. And I was relatively, content in that, I think. He was in the Christian music industry, so I just felt like he was definitely where God called him to be, and my role was to be supporting him in that ministry, mission, and art. And I was working and holding down the house and raising babies.
And that's a wonderful season, too. The support, to be a support and be able to do that while your husband's doing what he's been called to right now, sometimes it's just, okay, this is where...
Yeah. I tried to do it well.
I'm sure you did.
I'm sure I made a few mistakes.
So, after this season of in your support role and in raising kids and working and keeping up the home front, where does God kind of whisper to you that things are about to change or that?
I went to school for business for 5 years. I mean, I definitely think administration is definitely, one of my spiritual gifts. Through this whole process, I did work. I think that was important to me to work. I think it was ingrained in me as a child to be a laborer, so to speak, and whatever that labor, if it's raising family. I was always balancing some form of work outside the home too, except for maybe a three year window. I think the third kid put me over the edge where I kind of took a furlough from work. I think that prompting again goes seasonal. It's like, hey, this is, you can't be a good business person and a good wife and a good kid, take this season off. But then there's the same season to go, okay, you're ready to go back into the workforce, so to speak. So I think that prompting came pretty much in line with not only my husband coming off the road, but also the founding of an organization, the Hands and Feet Project. So the need really was there for some structure and some administrative, financial guidance. And so I have the gifts in this organization that my husband and I and Mark Stewart and fellow band members for Audio Adrenaline founded, and just felt like, hey, I can come in and help you. And really it was just as a volunteer, I can come in and help, and just really found maybe the spark of a purpose. Does that make sense? What you're trying to say? So I think it wasn't like I heard this audible voice of God that says, hey, you're called into the workforce. I just think maybe a series of yeses, use me, I have something to offer. And it maybe not wasn't such this big glaring thing, but more of a prompting.
Invitation,
that's what
maybe
most of us have is the series of yeses, though. That's perfectly said.
Yeah. I didn't feel a big kick in the back. It was like, why are you not doing anything?
And
right
I
now?
Oh yeah. And so. I love that you mention your spiritual gifting. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that can often be overlooked. Mm-hmm. In believers, like not recognizing we do have desires and dreams and things we want to do, and we have those placed in us, but to recognize that as an actual gift and be like, hey God, you put this in me, where do you want me, what do you want me to do?
And I will say that I've had seasons where it's like your Enneagram number, it's not something that you're just always love. Hey, your gift of administration. You're like, what? Like, I want to be a, something like more glamorous or something like, that might be perceived as more like beautiful or impactful. But I'm pretty, I don't want to keep talking about being age, but, I've just grown to be more content and recognize, that that's really what I have to offer. And I've been able to serve and with a lot of different organizations and businesses and using that gift. And so that's just kind of what it is.
So I like I like how you've recognized that that's what God's given you, and you have worked it out in different seasons and in different ways. And that's what you're doing with Hands and Feet Project. And that's...
Yes.
Yeah. So, exactly, because Hands and Feet Project is this beautiful outreach ministry. Can you tell us a bit about what Hands and Feet does?
Sure. Yeah. Sure. So, the organization was founded 2003, 2004. The initial idea was in response to Audio Adrenaline's song, the Hands and Feet, or Hands and Feet. And they were prompting people or asking people to do something bigger, missional, whether it's in your church or your school, your community, or internationally. And so we all came together and said, what can we do as a group that would be bigger than what we could do individually? And so the common thread through all of our passions and ministries and missions that we were all serving and doing things outside of one another was Haiti. And so the organization started really to serve the orphan and abandoned children. So that was kind of our initial mission. There was a need. We went down, we bought land, we built children's homes. And through the years, as we've learned and we've grown and we've adapted, we have 120 kids in our care at this point.
Wow.
Yeah. So
are they all orphans?
They're orphan and abandoned. So there's a poverty cycle in Haiti that's pretty devastating. And I think we have true orphaned, we have single orphaned children, and we have children that were abandoned. We have children that were in hard places, similar to maybe our foster care system, where they don't have a home that's safe for them to stay in. And so we work with social services there in Haiti, and kids are placed in our care. So they all have different stories, just like you and I all have different stories.
Yeah.
So eventually, you know, several years ago, recognizing that we really do child care well, what can we do to grow and actually do some other work there where we're going to prevent kids from being abandoned and placed in our care.
So you're looking at the preventative side now. Okay.
So we've moved into
keeping
families together. And so it's really caring for the orphan and abandoned, and then we fight for families. And so family is, you know, whether that's community-based care, whether that's reunification, whether if the kids are and the family are in a healthy place. So every kid's kind of in this different continuum of care. So we have kids in transition, reunification, community-based care, residential. And so they kind of all run in this big spectrum, just really meeting the needs of every kid that comes in our path. And what that looks like is just unique and different for each child. So this is our 15th year. So
15 years.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. And then we've just kind of worked past fighting, keeping families together, to job creation and trying to create a generous economic cycle where people can have dignified jobs and keep their families intact. And so it's morphed and grown as we've learned and
seen the needs.
Yeah. Yeah. And just changing your perspective and learning from your mistakes. And, you know, I think if we went into Haiti today, how we would serve and what it would look like would be vastly different than what we started 15 years ago. But
yeah. So do you go often? Do you send teams pretty frequently, or?
Yes. The environment on the ground in Haiti right now is pretty challenging.
I've heard that.
So we have not been sending teams because it's just the travel logistics are too hard. So we're not, we're in Jacmel and Grand Guave. So Jacmel has an airport, Grand Guave doesn't. You have to go through Port-au-Prince. So our staff is traveling in and out. My husband's there right now. Not to keep using the word seasons, but different times in my service to Hands and Feet, my amount of time on the ground has been different. Early on in ops, I would be checking in and traveling down, and then I was a child care director for several or a few years. And so my husband and I and my family actually lived in Haiti for 18 months during that time. And we would spend all of our summers and Christmas breaks. And then I would travel for like 2 or 3 weeks at a time. So spent really, you know, probably about 2/3 of our year in Haiti, even when we were based stateside. So
okay.
I'm currently serving as the executive director. So my responsibilities stateside are a little heavier than maybe my responsibilities were on the ground in Haiti. So it's kind of flipped a little bit for this period of time. And traveling in less frequently now that the travel is super challenging. So
I had some friends who were about to send some of their family down there, and then they had to cancel it last minute just because of
a trip to help as a missionary
and then, but just for a couple of weeks, and their son was going to go, and the conditions apparently are just fairly dreadful right now, so it's they had to cancel it and they couldn't go. But I imagine your responsibilities over 15 years is gonna have you going in and out a little bit less. Can you tell us maybe just a really amazing story about a time you were there that just warms your heart, that's just something you sit back on and, you know, just something really beautiful that stands out from one of your trips? Because I know you got a lot and of time there.
Yeah,
so
that's a hard question.
Yeah. May not be your favorite. We'll just say one of the top.
One of them. I mean, I think when our time there, living there, will always be really a precious time for our family. So that's kind of a... maybe not necessary for me specifically. It did have a lot of great moments, but just to be the thing that I love about Haiti, and really just Southern culture, but warm climate culture, is that people just are more in tune to like a rhythm that is it flows with people, less with the clock. And so I think for me, just for our family to be able to live in the time where it's just, okay, we can wake up with the chickens and the roosters and we sit and we have our time together, and then we go off and we do ministry and mission and we have our lunch meal together. So you almost have this kind of like afternoon respite, and then you go and you do this kind of flow, and then the family comes back together and we're living at the children's village. And so then we did life with all the kids and all the, you know, staff. And it just felt very, it just felt really in tune to God and like what we were supposed to be doing at any given time, because there's just space.
You're moving with the flow of the Holy Spirit with your days, and it's not structured and managed the way that we do it here. And we almost it really does.
Like I can. Oh, do you need me? Okay, I have a 5-minute window between one.
Yeah, you're like,
I've got
this appointment situation going.
Yeah, and you can. I mean, we make jokes about Haiti time and, you know, all these things that are a little slower, but most of the time those are because they're just responding in a way that we just don't really understand, you know.
Yeah,
and so there's
really
a lot of beauty in that. And then coming back here, that was pretty hard to actually, it was really easy to adapt into that when we moved there, but it was really hard to adapt back to be so rushed
scheduled
and so structured, and there isn't a lot of movement. So that was really, really awesome. But it's hard to say one really great story. I mean, we're doing a lot of different things, and I would say my most precious times would be when I'm really present when anyone is in need of something. So whether that's a kid that's wanting to sit and talk to me for 15 minutes, or a staff person that you can just kind of pour into and just go, this is what I'm fully aware, engaged, and present in this moment with you.
So your relationship pieces are your favorite memories of what you do what you've been doing.
Yes.
So.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Just having those, I don't know, between children and the parents and whoever it is you're trying to help, just being able to connect with them and just share the love of Jesus with your I'm sure, beautiful wisdom and heart and everything else. I love that.
Thank you. I mean, yeah, it's definitely relational. I think everything that has value is going to be relational. I mean, I can tell you all about the structure and systems and policies, but those, you know, that doesn't really spark or ignite anybody's passion. Maybe just me.
That's not your heart stories.
Sure, sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that they're people and kids just like us, and I think that's maybe the struggle for missionaries that come back from the field is that, or back and forth. So when we went to Haiti, and like anybody else who's done that call or that journey, is, you know, you leave relationships here. You know, there's not one time that we ever maybe missed, you know, some kind of like our house or our bed or, you know, our car, conveniences and food. It's just kind of, you just miss people connections. Yeah. And then when you're there and you just are like all in and deeply rooted, it's just, you come back to the States and that's the same thing you miss, you know, so.
I'm sure that transition is a little bit difficult.
It is. Yeah, it is. It's hard. Yeah.
But so. Also sweet.
So yeah, I mean, they're just, you just, yeah, they're just like your family. So your heart is kind of in two places, and you just will forever be just not content in that. Do you know what I mean?
So. But I really like too how it probably sparks this piece in you that wants to also very regularly be interceding for whoever you're not with too. So as you miss the people and as you miss your relationships, that probably brings your heart and your prayers like a little bit more intentional towards those people.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the better you know somebody, the more specific your prayers can be. I think, you know, Haiti collectively has a huge need for peace and provision and protection. You know, and then you can get down just to like this specific child. I know the specific child needs this intervention or this like you know, resolve, or this is a stronghold on them growing, and you can just kind of really narrow it down. So you know, just like when you are raising your own kids, you can kind of see, and you're in relationship with them, and they're talking to you, so you can walk through them with that too, you know.
And then you get to go back, and so I'm guessing maybe there's the communication between your staff that's there and you guys here, you're going to be able to continue to see these needs and watch God move and watch God change things. And
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we have U.S. missionaries at each site. So we have two children's villages. And so they're just technology and language. They're our main kind of liaison and communication. Frequent visits helps. You know, my husband's there today and I got to FaceTime with some of the girls. And so just trying to maintain relationships in the gaps of time too. But yeah, we have social work staff, and we're just kind of all, we always talk about, we create a circle of care around each kid, and we're all like part of that circle and communicating as a team and trying to get those kids to be the best that they can be is important.
Okay, so you mentioned a little while back about the government being the ones that placed the children or asked hands and feet to house and take care of kids. Was there ever an issue between mixing their government and you all being a religious, having that religious piece? Or,
well, so pre-2010, the social services, child protective services was non-existent. So 2010, the earthquake happens. All the eyes of the world are on Haiti and their government and their processes and how they're going to work their way out of this kind of catastrophe. And so everything that happened pre-2010 was really the burden of the police department and the mayor and our staff on the ground. So that there was really not a lot of, there was a lot of collaborative effort to get the best information and all of that. So I would say pre 2010, really not an issue. So post 2010, a lot of secular organizations who aren't necessarily supportive of faith-based NGOs have really, you know, made their way through the Haitian government. I think the nation, and I think most most people are supportive of the help. It's just some of the influences that are actually outside of Haiti are making that influence of going, hey, you know, we're not supportive of faith-based organizations. And how it's interesting that you asked that question, because I think we're at a pivotal place. In the last few months, I've had lots of conversations with government officials and people about how this is going to play out. But really getting, I wouldn't say maybe a little more challenged than most, or held to a different degree of care, which I think we're the best. So that's not necessarily the challenge, but it can be to not be held in equal expectations, I think, is a challenge. So we're starting to feel a little bit of that interference, maybe. A little bit of resistance to that. We definitely are losing our voice at a government level. So, you know, I think in those processes, the faith-based organizations are definitely losing their voice. I always say, I'm advocating for us to have a voice at the table, and how to move forward more collaboratively, faith aside, you know, maybe that's our motivation and our heart, but we're doing good work, and how can we work with the government moving forward? It is frustrating when outside influences that maybe aren't doing any steady work in Haiti have a bigger voice than maybe the people who are on the ground in their faith.
Because they have a big name or something.
Or they come with money. Come with money. They come with power. They come with influence. And so that's a challenge, I think, for this next. I think we'll see it play out more prevalently in the next, like, 3 to 5 years.
So. Okay, so that's definitely a good thing to be praying for when it comes to praying for Haiti and the...
Yeah.
Families and children there that
okay, so it'll be interesting. Say, you know, I think same here, you know, praying for our own country and how faith-based organizations and churches have a say, where our voice seems to be being encroached on.
It really is. What are different ways that people here on stateside can be involved in Hands and Feet Project? I'm sure you guys have all kinds of different creative ways of helping out.
We do. I think first and foremost, we believe in the power of prayer. So I would say, you know, that's going to be first and foremost, and it should always be our first response to any tragedy, any need, any collective wave and culture shift. So power of prayer, I think, especially right now, why Haiti's struggling, you know, so for peace and resolution and provision and protection for the people and the community members there. So again, gratitude for Hands and Feet Project, and that we've been able to kind of move forward and our needs have been met. But, you know, this 8 weeks has been really challenging, and it's having its toll on the community. So I would say prayer first. I would say, as far as our organization, the best way to stay involved in our kid care piece is to sponsor a child. So our kids, we care for our kids, we're guardians of them, so we 100% provide for all their needs, so medicine and school and housing and food. And so it takes a decent amount of sponsors to cover those expenses, and so we would love for somebody to sponsor a kid. Okay. You get the joy of knowing them and their name and a little bit of their story and how they live their life, and so it's a really fun way to stay engaged on that level. We have missionaries that are on the ground that are staff supported, so they need encouragement, and they need financial gifts, and they need people that are behind them. So they're just I always say they're in the trenches. So they're in the trenches. So if somebody's in the trenches and you can't be in the trenches, just based on whether that's not your calling or your season in life, or then you should probably be supporting somebody, right? So
right.
if you can't go, then give. So so that would be another great way. There's opportunities to do fundraisers, to have our founders and staff come and speak at your church or your your business. So there's a lot of ways to stay engaged and stay involved. Follow us on social media. I always tell people to tell the story. So, not everybody can do something, and some people are tied to other organizations, but you can still kind of tell the story.
You still tell the story. Yes.
Yeah.
And your website is?
Handsandfeetproject.org.
Org. Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to trip up on that last part.
sometimes
it's org, sometimes it's net, sometimes,
yeah. Yeah, .org.
So
.org. I think they all go back to the same one, but even if you did it wrong. So.
Awesome. Well, is there anything that we haven't talked about or covered as far as what you'd like to let everybody know about you or Hands and Feet Project that we haven't talked about?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you've asked a lot of great questions, and if you've felt like it was value to the listeners, and I think, we just all have to work through and find our purpose, and saying yes to some small things might lead to saying some yes to the bigger things. You know, I think me saying yes to helping for a couple hours a week, I don't think would have ever had the foresight to say that I was kind of, the leading this organization, And so even if back out before that, I think us saying yes to maybe starting what we thought was going to be a cute little, children's home has grown to 120 kids and job creation pieces and family preservation pieces. I don't think we would have ever had the foresight to see that. And so just kind of really honor what's been put before you and just see maybe where that heads. So
just keep saying yes to all the steps.
That's right.
I like that. Thank you so much for your time and for your heart and for just sharing with us what God's done in you and through you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Such a sweet woman with a genuine heart. That wraps up another episode at Pursuing True North. You can catch the Hands and Feet Project website in the show notes. And as always, you can go to pursuingtruenorth.com and find out the show notes, all the past episodes, and sign up for our newsletter so you don't miss what's happening. See y'all around.